Han was badly winded by the time he reached Waru's dome, even taking the shorter public route. Too much generaling, Han thought, and not enough work. The auditorium was filled as before with supplicants. Standing on tiptoe, Han tried to look over the heads and backs and carapaces of the assembly. Finally, he spotted Zavari standing near Waru's base. Waru had accepted another subject for healing, an Ithorian family.
Do you wish me to try to heal you, Seeker?
The quintet of tall, crook-necked beings carried a blanket-wrapped companion to Waru. The tallest of the Ithorians opened the blanket, revealing a youth painfully thin. Its intelligent eyes blazed at the ends of its hammer-shaped head, and it struggled to remain upright. The family gave it into Waru's care and stepped back. As before, the gold scales liquefied, flowed, and covered Waru's patient. Ichor dripped around the cocoon and solidified. Light glowed through the translucent covering. But this ritual was different. Instead of expanding, the chrysalis clenched as if it was squeezing the Ithorian youth. Waru sighed. The chrysalis exploded, like the embers from a forest fire out of control, whipped by a screaming wind. Brilliant sparks whirled up from the altar. Han watched in horror. Waru's scales fluttered and smoothed. On the altar, the Ithorian youth lay in a collapsed pile of awkward limbs. The youth's family huddled in a heap, holding each other, crying, afraid to look up.
I regret. I cannot always succeed. Perhaps you waited too long to ask my help. Or perhaps your offspring's time had come.
We honor you, Waru.
The Ithorian's voice fell to a ragged whisper.
We honor you.
Han pressed himself against the rear wall of the theater. Sweat sparkled and prickled in his vision. He closed his eyes, trying to blot out what he had seen.
Come with me, Solo, Zavari said.
He opened his eyes. She stroked his arm soothingly, wrapped her fingers around his, and led him from the theater. Zavari and Han walked in silence through the courtyard. Even after they passed beneath the arch, they did not speak. Luke ran toward them across the field, his robes flying.
I felt, I don't know, a disturbance.
Luke raked his fingers through his hair.
What's going on, Han? I feel like I'm standing on quicksand and I can't find solid ground.
Somebody died, Han said softly. A kid. Come on, let's go back to the inn.
When they were out of sight of Waru's dome, Zavari drew Han from the trail. She took his hands and looked into his eyes.
Now do you understand why I think Waru is true and dangerous?
Yes, Han said. Now I understand.
Ralau's strength returned quickly. She sat up in her bed, eating the stew Leia had brought her, picking out the chunks of meat with her fingers, then drinking the sauce when the meat was gone. Beside the wide port, Leia, posing as the bounty hunter Lilila, and Chewbacca, under the alias of Geahab, sat with Ralau and planned a strategy.
Lilila, Ralau said, when you found me, did you find anything else? A small machine. You could hold it in your hand.
No, Leia said. What was it?
Nothing. Nothing of any importance.
I'm going to the other ships, Leia said, to wake people, to ask them if they know where we should go, and to free them.
That would be a waste of time.
Freeing them?
Yes. They know nothing of their abductors. If you wake them now, you'll have to help them be on their way. It will take days.
How can you be sure no one here knows where our quarry went? Leia asked.
Sit down, and I will tell you.
Unwillingly, Leia sat near her. Ralau closed her eyes, took a deep, long breath, and began to speak.
An evil man, I will tell you his name, seized the ships drifting here in this desert. He thought he had the right because he was responsible for building them, for arresting and convicting the people imprisoned within them. Any world that defied the Emperor, he condemned. This evil man, I will tell you his name, even condemned his own home world, his own planet, Fireri. He condemned his own people and sent them into the wilderness to colonize new planets. In 1,000 years, he would seek them out and plunder whatever they had built. For you see, this evil man, I will tell you his name. believe the Empire would last 1,000 years, for you see, he was procurator of justice for the Empire. But his plans went awry. The Empire fell. His power vanished. He fled. But he fled with his resources intact, wealth and sycophants, and above all his own small planet, a world craft which can travel between the stars. He chased down the passenger freighters he had dispatched into the void. He towed them into hyperspace. He would not wait 1,000 years. He would plunder them now. He could have freed his former prisoners. He could have returned them to their home worlds, to their families. He could have submitted himself to the compassion of the New Republic, which is said to be merciful. But this evil man, I will tell you his name, did not ask for the Republic's mercy. He towed the captured freighters into hyperspace, and he brought them here. He left their passengers sleeping and unaware. He visits. He passes through the ships like the vengeful god he wished to be. He chooses children and takes them away to sell them into slavery. He lives in luxury, planning the rebirth of the Empire, planning to rule over the Empire reborn. His name is Hethrir. Herlau smiled with grim satisfaction when she revealed the procurator's name. She folded her hands, finished with her story.
Is that what happened to you?
Leia asked.
He made you watch while he stole your son?
It is more complicated than that. My relationship with Hethrir is unique. She pulled her knees to her chest and wrapped her arms around her legs and buried her face. And now, I think, Herlau said, Hethrir has run out of freighter children to sell. Has he begun to steal them from the Republic's worlds? Are you trying to rescue one? Leia hesitated, then decided to tell as much of the truth as she dared. At first, the parents thought it was a kidnapping, for ransom. But no ransom demand arrived, so they hired you.
Yes.
And you are... Herlau paused, choosing her words carefully to avoid offense. You are new to this profession.
This particular profession, yes.
I will help you, and you will help me.
Yes, Leia said.
Take us to Asylum Station, Herlau said.
Tigris carried Anakin down the long tunnel to the Worldcraft's landing field, following Lord Hethrir and 11 handpicked proctors. Tigris hurried to catch up, to even out the line by walking two by two. Tigris's arms ached from the weight of the child Anakin. Anakin held tightly to Tigris's neck. Silhouetted ahead of him, the proctors followed Lord Hethrir onto the landing field.
The child can walk, Tigris thought. He should walk onto the Lord's starship. He should approach his destiny on his own two feet.
Tigris put Anakin down.
No, Anakin shouted. No, 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 not walk, no.
Tigris crouched down beside Anakin, gently disengaging the child's clenched fingers from his ragged brown robe.
Little one, everything will be all right.
Tigris hugged the child. Anakin flung his arms around Tigris's neck and sobbed quietly against his shoulder, hugging him fast.
My mother was the last person to touch me, Tigris thought. I was 10. And she hugged me and smoothed my hair and told me she loved me. But all the time she was stealing my ability to touch the Force. And even Lord Hethrir has not been able to give it back to me. The last person to touch me was a traitor.
Back at his room at the inn, Han sank into the couch. The glass doors to the terrace hung slightly ajar. Heavy, hot air flowed over him. Han was exhausted and distressed. Sorrow swept over him, and terror. The memory of the Athorian family transmuted itself into his own family. But Leia and the children are safe, and Chewbacca is keeping watch over them all. They're fine, he told himself. But he could not stop shivering.
Did you know what was going to happen?
He asked Zavari in sudden fury.
Did you know Waru was going to murder that kid?
I knew another person would die. I cannot know when. I cannot know who.
Waru's a healer, Luke said reasonably. No healer can succeed all the time. It's tragic, but people do die, even young people.
You didn't see what happened. Waru didn't fail. Waru planned what happened. Where did that thing come from? What is it?
When Crucia Station belonged to the Empire, Zavari said, the Procurator of Justice used it as his headquarters. He used it as a prison for enemies of the Emperor. He used it as a torture chamber for his own enemies. And he used it to perform savage rites. It is said that Waru appeared in response to the Procurator's rites. It is said his sacrifices called Waru from empty space and strengthened Waru with the lives of people. It is said that they forged a pact, an alliance, that when Waru is satisfied, it will reward the Procurator with absolute power.
A chill crept up Han's spine. The Procurator of Justice is dead, Han said.
Zavari opened her soft brown eyes and gazed at him.
He's one of the survivors? The ones you've been tracking and watching?
I've been trying to catch up with the Procurator for a long time. I've discovered that he comes here. When he does, I will be waiting.
But Waru's a healer, Luke said again.
Luke, I'm sorry this isn't working out the way you wanted. But we have to stop this thing.
Luke, as stubbornly defiant as he had ever been as a youth, simply gazed at Han.
If Waru's a manifestation of anything, it's the dark side, Han said.
No, Luke said. Not the dark side. I know what the dark side feels like. This isn't it.
Han didn't reply. He shivered deep and hard. The more he fought it, the worse it got. Zavari rose from the couch beside him and went to Luke.
Leave us for a bit, Master Luke, she said.
Luke returned to his own room. Zavari sat beside Han.
Solo, I understand. We will stop Waru, you and I, together. He is powerful, but we will think of a way. Now you must sleep. You must rest.
She enfolded him in her arms. The terrible shivering slowed and slipped away and ceased. Han fell asleep.
Lord Hethrir's starship tunneled out of hyperspace. Normal space opened, bright with stars. Tigris bathed in beauty.
It will be some hours before we reach Crassia Station, Lord Hethrir said. I must meditate. I must prepare for the child's purification.
He rose and gazed at Tigris.
You must sleep. You may sleep across my door.
Tigris was amazed. To sleep at his lord's door was an honor.
A small honor, to be sure, not the same as being promoted to proctor or being permitted to serve him at table, but it was an honor, nonetheless, the first one Lord Hethrir had ever shown him.
Thank you, my lord.
Leia prepared Alderaan for flight. She fastened safety straps around Hrolau. Then she and Chewbacca and R2-D2 secured themselves in the cockpit. Leia engaged the drive. Alderaan came to alert around her. It displayed her surroundings, picking out each of the disabled ships, charting a safe course past them. Leia felt guilty about leaving them, but Hrolau was right. A few days this way or that would make no difference to the sleeping passengers. A few days' delay for Alderaan might lose the children. All the children. Forever. She sent an unsigned message, an SOS, from the stolen ships to General Han Solo. Delilah the Bounty Hunter could not afford to think of asking the famous freedom fighter to come to her aid. She could not afford to think of the touch of his hand, the warmth of his body in the night, his grief and rage when he learned all that had happened. Alderaan displayed its course to Asylum Station. Leia accepted it. The ship powered forward.
Han struggled against the terrible paralysis of sleep. Anakin was in danger. A great space snake writhed toward the child, who watched with interest and a complete lack of fear.
The snake metamorphosed into Boba Fett, the bounty hunter, intent on kidnapping Han's children, so Han would be in his power as well. A reflection glinted off Boba Fett's helmet, gold as sunlight. The bounty hunter whispered a curse. The gold and red expanded, brightened, and transmuted themselves into the shape of Waru. Han's child clambered to his feet and ran toward the being.
Solo. Solo, wake up!
The shaking released him. A nightmare, Zavery said. A nightmare. Not real. Han was in bed, lying on his bed, to be more accurate, with his boots and jacket off and a light coverlet thrown over him. Zavery sat on the coverlet beside him.
How did I get here?
I put you here, of course, Zavery said. Time has passed. Neither of us is of an age to rest well sitting up. He remembered one night when their only choice had been to sleep sitting up, up to their necks in muddy swamp. They had slept in turns, holding each other, so they would not both slip beneath the surface and drown. Zavery smiled. I did not offend your modesty.
Do you have a family?
Han asked suddenly. Her expression hardened.
You know that I had a family before you met me. You know that the Empire...
I mean now, he said gently. The Empire's a long time ago.
Are you alone? Haven't you found someone? I will always be alone. I will never again...
She stopped and shook her head.
I will always be alone. If I had not made that vow, Solo, I would never have left you.
You're cheating yourself.
In your opinion. But imagine, if your nightmare had been real.
Han stiffened. He rejected the possibility violently.
It was just a dream.
If your nightmare had been real, would you not protect yourself from experiencing it again, no matter how many years ago it had been?
It was just a dream.
Han's knowledge of his complete vulnerability swept over him even stronger than the night before.
Your experience was a dream, Solo.
Zavery rose.
Mine was real.
She left him alone. The door closed softly behind her. Han threw the coverlet onto the floor and got up. In his stocking feet, he rapped on the door of Luke's room and entered without waiting for a reply. Han saw Luke's face.
What's the matter?
Leave you alone for a bit? A bit?
Huh? What are you talking about?
Oh, you mean what Zavery asked you. Did you want to talk some more? Sorry, I fell asleep.
And she didn't leave till this morning, Luke said with a dangerous edge in his voice.
No, she... Wait a minute, what are you suggesting?
Suggesting doesn't have anything to do with it.
Now look, kid.
Don't call me kid.
Luke's hand slipped beneath his robe where he carried his lightsaber.
What the hell's the matter with you?
Han asked, poised halfway between laughing and losing his temper.
What are you going to do, chop me into little pieces because I spent a few hours alone with an old friend?
I don't know what I'm going to do, Luke said.
Apologize, that'd be a good start.
Luke glared without replying.
If you don't trust me, if you don't think Leia should trust me, why'd you come with me? Or is that why you came with me?
I'm going out to try to cool down, Luke headed for the door. And I hope I don't run into your old friend while I'm at it.
Jaina opened the door cautiously and peeked outside. Every night, alone, she had been practicing creating light, building it up molecule by molecule so Hethria wouldn't notice. She had done something else, too. She had worked with her multi-tool, poking and prying at the lock on her cell. Finally, she had unlocked it. Her light glowed from behind her, casting her shadow all the way across the dark stone floor. She quickly let her light go out, afraid someone was watching. A proctor stood in the entrance of the corridor. He was supposed to be standing, but instead he was leaning, and he was asleep. Across the room, a faint line of light glowed in the darkness. Jaina crept toward it.
Jason,
she whispered.
Get me out of here,
he whispered back. Jaina got out her multi-tool. She would have to figure out the lock from the outside now that she had figured it out from the inside. Then she grinned. She grabbed the handle and pulled the door open. The cell doors were latched, not locked. They could not be opened from the inside. They did not need to be locked on the outside. The door squeaked.
What? Who's there?
The proctor stumbled to his feet. Jaina jumped behind the door. The proctor ran over to the open cell.
What's going on here? How did you open this door?
I don't know, Jason said. It just opened.
The proctor poked at the lock. Jaina pushed the door toward him as hard as she could. The heavy wood banged against his head. He shouted and stumbled into Jason's cell. Jason ran past him, and Jaina slammed the door so the proctor was locked inside.
Let's go.
Jaina grabbed Jason's hand and pulled him toward the corridor.
Wait, what are we going to do? What about the others? Maybe they want to come.
One by one, Jaina and Jason opened the doors of the other cells.
We're running away. Do you want to run away, too?
Most of the other children jumped up and ran out into the gathering room, but a few backed away into the corners of their cells. Jaina did not try to make them come with her. She did not have time. She left their doors open in case they wanted to change their minds. Jason grabbed her hand. Together they ran into the corridor with their beacons of glowing air swirling ahead of them and behind them. The other children followed. The tiny sun was just setting when they reached the stairwell to the outside. Jaina ran up the stairs and raised her head above the edge. No one was watching. The playground was deserted.
What about the dragon?
One of the other children whispered.
I don't know, Jaina said. Jason, we can't use the multi-tool. The sun's going down.
Jason flicked a tiny swirl of heated air into existence and concentrated it. It was much brighter than the light from Jaina's multi-tool lens. It bounced across the playfield. Jaina and Jason ran after it.
Dragon,
Jason cried.
Hey, you dragon.
The dragon jumped up out of the sand and roared. But she did not throw herself against the fence. She looked around and snorted and leapt into the air, trying to catch the flame toy Jason made for her. Then she hunkered down beside the fence and pressed her shoulder against the mesh. Jason rubbed her pebbly scales. The dragon rumbled. The alarm started ringing. The children swarmed up over the fence and jumped to the ground. Jason slid onto Mistress Dragon's back.
Is this okay, Mistress Dragon? Can I ride you?
The dragon snuffled and raised her head, but she did not buck or roll over or try to rub Jason off against the fence.
Come on, hurry!
Jason held out his hand to Jaina. She grabbed it and jumped onto the dragon's back. They helped the other children on. Soon the dragon was covered with children. Most rode her back, but a few hung onto her legs, giggling. Jason dangled his fire toy in front of Mistress Dragon. Swinging along through the sand, the dragon followed the point of light away from the fence and out through the canyon mouth. Mistress Dragon reached the bottom of the sand dune. She strode across the ground toward the stream and the forest. She could move very fast when she wanted to. Jason fumbled in the front of his shirt and pulled out a little creature. The creature stretched its two pairs of wings and grabbed Jason's finger with its one pair of feet.
It's from Munto Kodru, Jaina said. It's a bat.
The bat crouched in Jason's hand, stretching its wings in four directions. Jason touched the bat's wingtip with the tip of his finger.
Let it fly, Jason said. It's been all cooped up.
The bat spread its wings and vanished into the dark. Then it came back and settled happily in Jason's hair. They reached a stream. The children jumped off the dragon's back and swarmed into the thick bushes that lined the stream and began eating the fat and juicy berries that grew on them. Jaina said to Jason,
I bet Hethrir and the proctors couldn't go in those bushes. I bet we could.
Jason grinned.
It would be like caves.
The children all splashed through the stream and climbed the far bank and crawled on the wet, mossy ground and slipped under the dense bushes. Jason found a sort of trail. He said an animal probably made it. Jason untangled the four-winged bat from his hair and let it go.
It's going to look for a place for us to go.
He had persuaded it the way he had persuaded Mistress Dragon. They crawled down the trail. Jason took the lead and Jaina went last. A few minutes later, Jaina heard voices and the hum of land speeders. Behind her, Mistress Dragon roared and splashed and thumped. The proctor started yelling.
Hurry,
Jaina whispered, expecting every second to be dragged backward by Hethrir's power. In front of her, the other children crawled as fast as they could. Behind her, one of the proctors yelled in protest.
Ow! What are these, thorn bushes? I'm not crawling through thorn bushes. You will, or you'll be sorry.
Jaina heard the head proctor yell. The trail suddenly opened out into a space beneath the bushes. All the children crouched at the edge of the wide, muddy space. On the other side of the wallow, a huge tree rose up through the bushes, its roots twisted together, spreading out across the far side of the swamp.
Look,
Jason pointed. The little bat flitted across the swamp and into a dark place among the roots.
It's like a tunnel, Jaina said. I bet it is. I bet it leads into the tree, just like on Chewie's world. How are we going to get over there? I don't know. I guess the bat forgot we can't fly.
Proctor sounded nearer. They also sounded mad.
Jason took a big step forward into the mud. He immediately sank in up to his knees. He tried to take another step, but the mud sank under him. He sank to his hips. Jaina slid down the bank and grabbed him. She almost reached for him with the force, but shrank back, scared that Hethrir would find them. Then the other children clustered around her, reaching for Jason, grabbing his hands. They pulled him free and onto the bank.
A little at a time, Jaina thought. Then Hethrir can't stop me. He can't find me. A couple of molecules.
Instead of speeding up molecules the way she speeded up the air to make light and heat, she slowed the water molecules in the swamp. She slowed them, and slowed them, and nearly stopped them. A fine film of ice formed near the bank. The children ran across. Jaina helped the little ones, then dove into the hollow. She squirmed around to see what the proctors would do. The head proctor pushed his way through the prickly bushes. His face was scratched, and his pale blue jumpsuit was dirty and torn. He looked very mad. The other proctors fought their way out of the bushes behind him. The head proctor saw the path of ice across the swamp. He frowned and tested the surface with one foot, then stepped out onto the solid patch. Jaina waited until he was in the middle of the swamp, and the other proctors were strung out behind him on the ice. Jaina dropped the water molecules. The ice disappeared. Jaina fled into the hollow root, and she did not look back to see what was happening. But she could hear the shouts and the splashes. Leia heard a cry coming from a far distance and slapped the emergency controls of her ship, crashing out of hyperspace. Chewbacca howled in shock. Erlau snarled something in a language Leia had never heard.
"What are you doing? We must hurry to Asylum Station," Erlau asked.
"Look," Leia said. Before them lay a tiny star and a tiny blue and green and brown planetoid.
"It's artificial," Leia exclaimed.
"It's too small to be natural. The star, the planet..."
"It's a world craft," Erlau said.
"No,"
Erlau answered Chewbacca.
"They're not mythical. I wish they were. The Emperor caused a few to be created. He gave them as rewards to the cruelest and most loyal of his officers. Tokens, he called them."
She trembled with tension.
"He presented one to Hethrir."
Leia put on a burst of speed. Her ship arrowed toward the tiny artificial planet. As far as Leia could tell, the world craft was deserted.
"Have they all fled?" she wondered. "But if they fled, what brought me here?"
The starship slipped into the atmosphere, slowed, and changed to its soaring mode. It crossed a desert that gave way to a meadow, a stream. Alderaan stopped, hovering low over the flowing silver water. A great lizard rose up from the ripples, snorting, flailing its tail.
"There!" Erlau exclaimed.
Beyond the stream, past a wind-rippled sea of low green bushes, a huge tree twisted upward at the edge of a marsh. In the marsh, a group of people struggled in the mud. They looked like they had walked to the middle before they sank. Leia could not imagine how they could have gotten themselves in such a predicament.
"Leave them," Erlau said. "They aren't the ones we seek. If we help them, they'll try to stop us."
"But they're drowning." Growling with delight, Chewbacca pointed to the branches of the huge twisted tree. There, on a branch as wide as a garden path, a group of children stood high above the ground. They waved joyfully at Alderaan. The ship lowered itself gently beside them. Leia jumped up and ran back to the hatch.
"Mama! Mama!"
Lilila the bounty hunter vanished as if she had never been. Jaina leapt into Leia's arms, jumping across a sheer drop to the marsh. Chewbacca quickly moved Alderaan closer to the tree branch. Jason took Rilau's hand and stepped gravely onto the ship. Leia knelt and hugged Jaina and Jason, then held them against her with one arm. She could not bear to let them go, even as she reached out to the children still standing in the tree. With Rilau's help, all the children climbed from the tree and into Alderaan. On board, Leia introduced her children to the Ferrerio.
"You look just like Tigris," Jaina said.
"Where did you see him?"
Erlau asked, her voice so intense that Jaina took one apprehensive step back.
"Is he here? Is he with Hethrir? Is Hethrir here?"
"Are you his mama?"
Jaina asked.
Yes, little one. And I have not seen him in a long time. I miss him very much.
While they spoke, Chewbacca dropped Alderaan to just above the struggling, muddy mob and loosed a cable for them to grab. He used Leia's ship as their anchor and watched while they pulled themselves out of the mud. He could have pulled them out with the strength of the ship, but he did not.
Where is my son? Rilau asked Jaina. What is he doing?
I don't know, Jaina said. Mostly he followed Hethria around, and he took Anakin.
Hethria told him to, Jason said.
Jaina glowered at Rilau.
He kept trying to act mean.
But he wasn't, not really,
Jason said. Alderaan swooped. Chewbacca herded the proctors through the stand of bushes and across the stream. Leia brought the stolen children back to the compound. There she questioned the proctors once they had all straggled in.
Where are the other children? Where did Hethria take them?
I don't know, madam, the head proctor said.
She could see a tiny flare of fear in him. He was not exactly lying, but he was not telling her the whole truth either.
Where might they be? She asked. The little child, Anakin, and the youth, Tigress.
In the back of the group, one of the proctors snickered nastily.
The Lord Hethria,
the head proctor said.
He called the group only yesterday.
Called them?
Leia felt her skin grow cold and her heart angry.
Only to sell, madam, the proctor said. Then he departed.
To Asylum Station?
Yes, madam. He took the child, Anakin.
And Tigress.
Such contempt,
Leia said with wonder at his tone of voice.
Tigress is weak. The Lord Hethria wouldn't even make him a helper,
the proctor sneered.
He had to serve at table and nursemaid the youngest children.
And you believe that task isn't fitting for a strong young proctor.
Children are useless until they're old enough to serve the cause of the Empire Reborn.
No one will serve the Empire Reborn, Leia said. Not ever again. Defiantly, the proctor raised his arms and cried,
The Empire Reborn!
If he had not been so pathetic, so young, Leia would have been angry. As it was, she glanced at the bedraggled proctors, and she glanced at the tired band of children who had bested them. She laughed. The head proctor flinched as if she had struck him. And then, at least, he had the intelligence to look abashed. Soon after landing at Asylum Station, Hethria strode into the lodging that had been arranged for his visit. The inn was located in a quiet park, and the only sound in its lobby was the ripple and splash of the water in its indoor pools and streams. When Tigress entered behind Hethria, Anakin wriggled to get down. Tigress let him free gratefully, and then had to hurry after him as the little boy headed straight for the irresistible ponds. "Have my guests arrived?" Hethria asked.
Yes, my lord,
the waterspout host replied. A purple humanoid droid clattered into the lobby.
This is quite absurd. We are no more than hours late with the rent. My human companions will return soon and pay you. They are very busy people.
Mr. Threep,
Anakin shouted. He ran to the purple droid. Tigress bolted after him but could not keep him from fastening his arms around the strange droid's leg.
Mr. Anakin, the droid said. Whatever are you doing here? Where are your brother and sister? Where is your mother?
Bring the child back, Hethria said.
Tigress managed to pry Anakin's little hands from the droid's knee.
Who are you, young sir? What are you doing with my master Anakin?
As soon as Tigress freed Anakin from the droid's legs, Lord Hethria strode past him, drawing his lightsaber. The lightsaber flamed wildly. Its energy blade arced through the droid's head and body.
The handle backflashed. Sparks pierced the air, searing it into ozone.
Lord Hethria shouted a curse. His high-pitched shout startled Tigress even more than the failure of the lightsaber, and dropped the handle. The blade seared a fissure into the smooth flagstone, flashed to brilliance, and faded.
Tigress had never seen anything like it.
The droid, frozen in place, toppled onto the stone floor with a great metallic clank.
Anakin screamed and struggled. Mr. Threep! Mr. Threep!
Tigress scooped him up and held him despite his crying and kicking.
It's all right, little one.
Shh, shh.
Fetch my lightsaber,
Hethrir said to Tigris. Frightened but resolute, Tigris bent down awkwardly, holding Anakin in one arm and picked up the pommel of the lightsaber.
Secure the droid, Hethrir said to the host. It's dangerous. Later, perhaps we will wipe it and recycle it.
Leia tucked Jaina and Jason in her cabin on Alderaan after getting the other children settled in the Proctor's large, airy dormitory on the Worldcraft. She'd locked the Proctors in the children's former cell area, at least for the time being.
Mama?
Jaina asked.
Yes, sweetie? Can you make him stop?
Make who stop?
Stop what?
Jaina and I can't hear each other, Jason said,
like Uncle Luke taught us.
Leia frowned with concern.
Sweetheart, why not? Because Hethrir won't let us,
Jaina said.
But he isn't here, darlings.
Leia closed her eyes and opened herself to the widest range of her perceptions. She found nothing. She reached as far as she could. She could feel her children's fear. She could feel what they had experienced while Hethrir controlled them. Her heart trembled near breaking.
He isn't here, she said again. You're safe now.
Rilau ran into the cabin, her hair flying and her eyes wide.
What are you doing? Who are you? Who?
She stared at the children, then turned her gaze to Leia.
You are Jedi.
Leia shook her head. No, I'm untrained. The children are just beginning their training.
How did you know?
You just gave me the worst headache I have ever suffered in my life.
Rilau sat on the bed beside Leia and her children. With the tip of her finger, she stroked Jaina's hair, then Jason's, delicately. They both looked up, wide-eyed, frightened and fascinated.
Your mama is right, Rilau said. Hithrir has no power to touch you anymore.
Rilau spoke softly. As she spoke, as she stroked the children's hair, the strands of terror within Jaina and Jason disappeared beneath her touch. Leia watched, astonished.
Better now? Rilau asked.
Jaina and Jason hesitated for a moment as if they had been shut away from sunlight for so long that they could not believe its return. Then Jaina laughed aloud and Jason smiled.
Thank you,
Jaina cried. Jason watched Rilau gravely.
Yes, thank you, he said.
You're welcome.
Rilau turned to Leia.
We must speak.
Yes, we must. Leia gathered up the twins.
You're getting so big, she told them.
She put them back into her bunk and tucked them in again. In a moment, they had fallen asleep. Rilau left the cabin. Leia found her in the co-pilot's chair, staring out the forward port into the Worldcraft sky, her face illuminated by the lights of hyperspace.
Who are you?
Leia asked.
You're a Jedi. Aren't you? A real Jedi Knight.
I was,
Rilau whispered. Leia sat in the pilot's chair and turned toward the Ferrerio.
Tell me.
I was a student of Lord Vader. He taught us in secret. Even after the Empire declared our people subhuman and destroyed us, he kept me and one other. We were young, just beginning our studies. We fell in love. Lord Vader believed we would produce a child with extraordinary talent, one he could bend to the use of the Empire.
And did you?
Leia asked.
She thought, what is my brother facing? A youth as talented as Anakin, trained by my father, Darth Vader, Dark Lord of the Sith.
Rilau smiled gently.
We produced a child. An ordinary, sweet child. Tigris. I was so happy when I realized he had no talent for the Force.
Happy?
Leia exclaimed, simultaneously shocked and relieved.
Even before our child, I became a disappointing student to Lord Vader.
But you're extraordinarily talented. How could you be disappointing?
Can't you guess, my friend? I was not tempted to the dark side. It repelled me. Lord Vader treated me with scorn. My lover ceased to love me. Lord Vader appointed my lover.
You understand that he is the one whose name I spoke to you? You understand that he is Hethrir,
Procurator of Justice. Lord Vader charged him with the destruction of our world and the abduction of a freighter full of our people. My lover did it to prove his loyalty to the Empire. After the child came, I hid us on the smallest, meekest, most backward worlds. Lord Vader had great hopes for my son, and I feared what he might do when he discovered my son could not fulfill his ambitions. When the Empire fell, I thought perhaps we were safe. I did not know what had happened to my lover. I grieved that he was dead. And then, Ralau said softly, I discovered that I need not have grieved for my lover's death. The one I had loved discovered us. He imprisoned me. He took our child. He wanted our child to be his heir, to the Empire reborn, and to his dark power.
She smiled again, but her eyes were full of tears.
My sweet son, I fear what Hethrir has done to him in 5 years. He cannot fulfill his father's ambitions for him. He cannot gain for Hethrir full access to the dark side. He could be a fine scientist, or an artist, or an explorer diplomat. He cannot be a Jedi.
And you haven't seen him in 5 years,
Leia exclaimed in sympathy. She tried to imagine missing Jaina and Jason for 5 years. She did not think she would survive.
I have seen him, Ralau said. He came to the chamber with his lord. He called me traitor, and weakling, and fool. I must find him, Lelila. Perhaps he's already lost to me. Lost to himself. But perhaps Hethrir has not yet extinguished his sweetness. What your children said of him gave me hope.
My name isn't Lelila, Leia said.
You needn't tell me.
It's Leia. And when we rescue when we rescue your son and mine, we'll go home to Coruscant. You'll have a safe haven. You'll have colleagues. Luke, my brother Luke Skywalker, will be so excited to meet you. To her astonishment, Ralau dropped to one knee before her, awkward in the cramped pilot's cabin.
Princess Leia of Alderaan, she said. Freedom fighter, destroyer of the Empire, and founder of the New Republic. I pledge you my loyalty. I should have recognized you.
Suddenly shy, Leia began twisting and plaiting her hair into a messy heap on top of her head. I was traveling incognito, she said. Leia hurried to her pilot's seat. She lifted Alderaan off the world craft. They were leaving the other stolen children on it, having programmed the planetoid to travel to Manto Kodru. There the children would be safe, and the work of finding their homes and families could begin. Leia and her group were on their way to Asylum Station, and Anakin. Alderaan's molten skin shivered beneath the assault of X-rays as it dove into the strange system. Leia frowned. She had never been to Asylum Station, yet she recognized it. There could not be two such strange stations. It's Cressia, she exclaimed as R2-D2 whistled the same conclusion. Cressia Station.
Yes, Ralau said. Its real name is Cressia. In the trade it is known as Asylum. Do you know it?
My husband and my brother are here.
Leia felt both hope and joy.
If Anakin's here, Luke will know it.
Tigress entered the meeting hall of Cressia Station's Traveler's Lodge. The long stone pews were filled. Tigress recognized most of the people who waited for Lord Hethrir. Lady Yuki sat in the place of honor reserved for the most generous donor to the Empire Reborn. Lord Kwakuku sat among Lord Hethrir's lesser supporters. A child of a non-human species accompanied each guest. All the guests, of course, were human. Tigress saw the centaur child who had joined Anakin's sister in defying the rules of Lord Hethrir's school. In fact, many of the slave children in the room were from the group that Lord Hethrir had just culled and sold. Keeping his silence, holding Anakin's hand, Tigress looked for a place to sit. The meeting room was very full. Lord Hethrir swept in and strode down the central aisle and took his place on the podium.
You may be seated, Hethrir said.
But one of the guests remained standing. Tigris recognized him. His name was Brasha. He was a notorious miser. He was not even attended by a slave. Instead, he dragged Anakin's pet after him on a heavy chain. It panted and whined. Slaver dripped from its heavy, pitted fangs.
What is it, Brasha?
Lord Hethria said.
My lord, for many years now you have promised action. We grow weary of concealing ourselves from usurpers of the New Republic. My lord, we must act soon, before our children are too much affected by egalitarian propaganda, before our generation is too old to act, to fight.
I think you do not trust me, Brasha,
Hethria said.
My lord,
Brasha protested. He grew pale with dread and regret. Tigris felt sorry for him and was horrified that the man had questioned Lord Hethria. Lord Hethria stared at him. Brasha's face reddened. He gasped for breath. All around him, people withdrew, afraid that to stand too close would mean contamination. A trickle of blood leaked from Brasha's nostril.
I beg your forgiveness, my lord.
Lord Hethria simply gazed at him.